Hi, I'm Phil Vavra, and this is Piedmont Arts. From hiking and camping in the Blue Ridge Mountains to enjoying the sun and surf along the coast, summer in North Carolina has a lot to offer. There's also a rich tradition of outdoor theater in our state. On this episode, we'll venture beyond the Piedmont, since you might also with your summer vacation plans, and I'll be speaking with Chuck Still, the executive director of The Lost Colony, one of America's longest-running outdoor dramas, which has been entertaining audiences in the coastal town of Manio since 1937. Later, I'll tell you about other fun things happening across our region with fanfare. If you're planning a vacation to the Outer Banks, you need to make time to take in a performance of The Lost Colony at the Waterside Theater in Manio, just as more than 4 million people have since 1937. The historical outdoor drama was written by North Carolina playwright Paul Green at a time when the town was struggling. Well, all of America was, because of a little something called the Great Depression. But his play was a hit, attracting enough tourists to stimulate the economy of Roanoke Island and the Outer Banks. Hotels, motels, restaurants, they all benefited. So what had originally been intended for one season was produced again the following year and has become a North Carolina tradition since then. In fact, it's billed as the number one tourist attraction at the Outer Banks. I'm joined by Chuck Still, the executive director of the Roanoke Island Historical Association, the organization behind the play. Mr. Still is a graduate of Davidson College and the North Carolina School of the Arts, and has worked in theatrical production and management from High Point to Houston, as well as Broadway. Thank you for taking the time to speak with me about your current work with The Lost Colony.
Thank you, Phil. And you picked up on High Point.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's really clear in my resume, but yes.
I found it somewhere.
that's my first professional production manager with the North Carolina Shakespeare Festival in the mid-80s. They were headquartered in High Point at the time.
And when did you make the move to Manio?
March of 2022. I was running a large presenting house in Pennsylvania. I'd gone there in January of 2020. And then we all know what happened in March of 2020. And it was kind of a failure. And I ended up moving here, coming here.
Was there anything specific that drew you to the role?
The biggest thing for me was North Carolina at the time. Honestly, having gone to Davidson and gone to graduate school, the North Carolina School of the Arts. I hadn't lived here since 1987, but some of my best friends are in North Carolina. And I thought, you know, hey, I'll go back to North Carolina. I'll be near people I love. And they've been doing this for 80 plus years. It'll be smooth, easy. All I have to do is just pull off this show in the summer. It turned out to be a little different than that. But those were the reasons why I came here.
Turned into a full-time job, huh? Well, let's talk about the show. The Lost Colony is based on accounts of Sir Walter Raleigh's attempts in the 1500s to establish a permanent settlement on Roanoke Island. It must be something to put on this historical drama in the very place where the history happened. Does that have an effect on the audience, do you think? And does it have an effect on those of you who work on it?
I think it very much has an effect on the audience. And I also think it has an effect on all of us. I actually find myself at times when I'm driving across the causeway, leaving the island, looking out at the sound and imagining what it looked like when they sailed their ships in here. Part of the truth, though, is that the actual shoreline that they encountered is probably about a quarter of a mile out there under the sound because of the erosions over the years. Particularly a couple of hurricanes that took away a lot of the land. So some of what was the historic site is underwater at this point.
For those who might not be entirely familiar with the story, there's still an unsolved mystery as to what happened to those early settlers, isn't there?
There is not a definitive historical account of what happened to the first settlers. Now, in the play, there's the play and there's history, and sometimes the two overlap. But the truth is, in the play, John White leaves to go back to England, and at that point, it's all made up. In the end of the play, a Spanish ship has anchored in the Sound. The colony knows they're about to get into war with Spain. Manio offers that they can come south with him to Croatoan. They carve Croatoan on a tree, and they hike off into the wilderness. Now, the history is more complicated because there's evidence of them in Croatoan, which is Hatteras at this point. There's also evidence of them on the mainland. There's evidence of them being killed up near the Chesapeake. I heard an anthropologist speak one of my first weeks here on the job, and she said it was highly unlikely that the colony would have gone all gone one place together, that they would have probably split into the different classes, different families, and gone off in different directions, which would account for all of the stuff. We have a historian on our board. We have to have a historian. It's in our bylaws. And she will tell you that they went a bunch of different places. Everybody wants to claim this place for everybody, and probably they just went a bunch of different places.
So is there still ongoing research into the mystery?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, there is. There is ongoing research all the time. And people, I'm surprised there aren't knife fights and gun fights and stuff, because people are so committed to their version of where they went. But I don't know that the history, given the records of the time, I don't know that the history will ever be completely put to bed. Our answer is as good as anybody's answer.
Now, when you see the Lost Colony in 2025, clearly it's not going to be the same production as it was in 1937. How has this production evolved over the decades?
It has evolved many times over the decades from the original script. When Paul Green did it the first time, there were dancers. There's actually a choir in choir robes and a narrator. That changed. Joe Layton changed the production drastically in, when was Joe Layton? Was this late 60s, early 70s? He changed it drastically, brought in a bunch of the dancing for the Native Americans, for the Indians, which in the old days were primarily dancers. And it's gotten modified. In 2018, there was an outside study done for the Roanoke Island Historical Association that basically said, if you don't change this thing, it's going to die. That's been the truth of outdoor theater. Paul Green wrote 12, I think, and maybe three of them are still working. Everybody used to do outdoor theater. It was a big thing. Every town had an outdoor theater telling the story, the history of their place, and many of them are gone. Basically, this thing said, if you don't fix it, even though you're kind of the granddaddy, it's going to go away. So the COVID year, where we were dark, and the COVID money, which the federal government was giving out, allowed the Roanoke Island Historical Association to drastically reconsider how they present this show. And it went from a 3-hour, more serious talky drama, which probably told the history more correctly. It went to a more commercialized Broadway. We spent probably $2.5-3 million on technology, got rid of bulky old scenery that they've been using for years. We got projections. There's a musical score that runs throughout. It's all new lighting equipment. Some of the locals have said we Disneyfied the show. I don't think that's untrue, but if you're trying to tell a story to appeal to 21st century families on vacation in the Outer Banks, Disney probably in a really, really bad way to go. The thing about the show now is my board will all say they really love it because their grandkids stay awake.
That's a good thing.
I honestly don't know that we tell the history as well as we did, but it keeps people interested and awake. And instead of being 3 hours long, it's 2 hours long.
Well, North Carolina is remarkable in that it does have a number of these outdoor dramas still going.
So, a lot, yes. For example, more than most.
Horn in the West, Unto These Hills, are they making the same sorts of changes that you've made with The Lost Colony?
I don't know about Horn in the West. I know that Unto These Hills made some changes in recent years to their story. Another big thing that we did coming out of the study in 2018 is that it used to be the Native American roles were played primarily by Caucasians. We're in red face. And one of the big changes we made was after 21, all the Native American roles were played by Indigenous peoples. That seems a pretty easy, this is kind of common sense kind of thing. It caused some consternation. It still gets some consternation from people. I don't know that we realized all the ramifications of what would happen, but they brought in a cultural coordinator who made sure that they weren't just speaking the Native Americans, you know, in the Paul Green script, they were just speaking broken English. Now what they say is in a Native American dialect. The dances are more representative of what they would have been. So it got, and there used to be a park ranger who started the show, and now it's a Native American storyteller who starts the show. So that whole aspect of it has changed. And the great thing that has sprung out of it is our relationship with the Native American people in Eastern North Carolina. It has been illuminating for this institution, and we've created some great friendships and great relationships with folks. And it has, in turn, brought interest and notoriety to us that we probably wouldn't have gotten. The Washington Post did a big article on it in 2023, and it's something that we continue to work on, but it's really an interesting aspect of the new production.
I get what you're saying when it sounds like, well, sure, that's sort of a no-brainer. Let's go for as much historical accuracy and authenticity as possible. Was some of the pushback just because you had deviated from tradition? Like people were saying, that's not the way it was when I was a kid when I saw the show.
I think part of it's tradition. I think, unfortunately, now in the world we're living in right at the moment, everything you do puts you on one side of the cultural divide or the other. I would like to believe that the reaction to it in 2012 would not have been the same reaction to it that it was in 2021. I don't think we'd have gotten letters saying the Lost Colony has gotten all woke on us. We weren't making a political statement.
Right.
But for some people, it was interpreted as a political statement.
Well, another way that the show has changed over the years, of course, is with the cast. And there have been some notable names on the stage in Mandio over the years. Probably most notably would be Andy Griffith, who spent 7 years with the production. Who are some of the other people that have played roles in The Lost Colony?
Chris Elliott, the comedian, was here.
Oh, from Schitt's Creek.
My actual favorite is, and it would be appropriate for you, Carl Castle was here.
Right, public radio announcer, sure.
And he was here. And the other day, so we had really bad rain the first weekend. And when I work the show, we have a club golf cart that we carry people in and out who can't make the walk to the front. It's really fun to drive the cart and talk to people. So I was driving this older woman in. She said, Oh, yes, I'm 90 years old, but I was in the show. I think she said she was in the show for 10 years, from the time she was six till she was 16. And she said, I was in the show all those years, and I dated Carl Castle. I said, really? And she said, yes, I dated him. But then I broke up with him. I've got all his letters. And he sent me this letter and said, you broke up with me, but I went to your home and had your mother's lemon meringue pie. It just cracked me up. Then it was raining. That night it rained the whole time. It was a little drizzle, and it drizzled all night. And if it drizzles, we do the show. If it's not heavy enough to hurt the costumes, we're going to do the show. And so I'm out there at intermission, and she comes out and she's leaving. I said, oh, you're leaving. Don't you want to stay to the end? And she looks at me and says, I know how it turns out.
That's great.
But anyway, she dated Carl Castle.
A little
So
summer romance, huh?
there you go.
Yeah. I had read too that Lynn Redgrave had a brief stint, seven performances or something like that, as Queen
Yeah,
Elizabeth.
we have in the past done some stunt casting for the Queen, and Lynn Redgrave was in the show as the Queen. There were a number of people who played Queen Elizabeth, who isn't honestly in the production a whole lot. She has a couple of scenes, but she has the best costume, and
Yeah.
when she comes, I mean, she's and it's actually a pretty easy role to get a kind of cameo in. Governor Cooper's wife, Kristen Cooper, actually did a cameo in 23 or 24. We had done a thing in Raleigh, and she got interested, and she came out and did a cameo, and we actually built a costume for her so that she could come in as a kind of page to the queen and give her something. The other thing is that people don't realize is the last week of the show, if you're the last week of the show, the big penultimate moment is the final march. They decide they're leaving, and they all march off up this hill into eternity. And the last week, there will be all manner of people in the last march. Because all you have to do is just wear dark clothes and we throw a cloak on you. So the props people, everybody, all the crew will get on the calendar that they can march in the final march. So toward the end, everybody marches in the final march. And we've been, over the years, we've let alumni do the final march. So there are often people on the stage that aren't there all the time.
Oh, that's great. Again, everyone gets a chance to be out in front of the crowd like that. Well, I think it's remarkable, too, is that in all the years since 1937, only two seasons were missed, 1944 because of World War II.
Actually, they missed four seasons.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we say it's this is the 88th season. It's the 88th year. It's actually the 83rd because we missed four during World War II and we missed the COVID year. The really funny thing is that when they came out of 45, the question was, are we going to continue doing it? And it was debated in state government because that's when we came under the patronage and control of the state of North Carolina. And Governor Broughton had a great speech, and I'll just paraphrase a little bit. He talked about how nothing better captured the ideals of North Carolina, da, 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 which is fine. It was typically overblown. But the cool, funny thing he said was, you know, we got to have the lost colony back because it really changed the economy. And in his speech, he said, many a house that had never seen paint got its first coat. And and houses that had never had plumbing now have plumbing like other people in the state, which as an arts organization, you don't often get the claim, hey, we put indoor plumbing in your places.
You're responsible for infrastructure. That's wonderful.
Yeah. And so with all the support of all of them, they decided to bring it back and made us under the control and patronage of the state and promised us so much money a year to help run the place.
And in 2013, the Lost Colony received a very special honor, the Tony Honors for Excellence in Theater Award. What did that mean to the legacy of Paul Green's play and to all those who have been a part of it over the years?
It puts a stamp of approval from the international theater world on this institution in a way that everyone who's been a part of it over the years can take pride in. The people who've been in the show call themselves alumni, but they also call themselves keepers of the dream. I just have a keeper of the dream medal. And all those keepers of the dream, the thousands of people who've been in the show, the thousands of crew, can take knowledge of the fact that they worked on a Tony Award-winning production. And I think that's a matter of pride for everybody involved. And I also get to put it on the signature on my email. So even though I had nothing to do with any of it, I can. And we got it out there in the lot. We got it right. I can go out there and get it. There's a Tony Award right out there. It's kind of nice.
The 88th anniversary season of The Lost Colony runs through August 23rd at the Waterside Theater in Mateo, North Carolina. You can find tickets and everything you need to know at thelostcolony.org. And my guest has been Chuck Still, the executive director of the Roanoke Island Historical Association, which transports us to The Lost Colony every year. Thank you again so much for your time.
You're welcome.
The dream still lives!
The Lost Colony isn't the only outdoor drama you can see in our state. In fact, we mentioned a couple of them earlier. Since 1952, families have been traveling to Boone, North Carolina to take in the outdoor drama Horn in the West at Hickory Ridge History Museum. It's the compelling story of Daniel Boone and his fellow frontier settlers during the Southern Campaign of the American Revolution. Also in western North Carolina, the mountain town of Cherokee hosts the annual production of Unto These Hills, a vivid portrait of the Eastern Band of Cherokee. In Valdez, North Carolina, the play From This Day Forward tells the story of the brave emigrants from northern Italy who came to the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains to start a new life. The play Strike at the Wind tells the story of the Lowry War in 1865 with performances at the Lumbee Tribe Cultural Center in Lumberton. The Snow Camp Outdoor Theater puts on a variety of productions, including programming for children in the southern Alamance County town of Snow Camp. And Shakespeare comes alive on outdoor stages every summer, thanks to the Montford Park Players in Asheville and Cape Fear Shakespeare in Wilmington. Now here's a look at some other interesting things to see and do over the next week with Fanfare. And don't look now, here comes August. Fortunately, there's still a little bit of time before school starts and our routines shift, so let's take advantage of these next couple of weeks and savor some sounds, sights, and bites across the Carolinas. The wonderful 2025 Brevard Music Center Summer Music Festival is drawing to a close this weekend, but not without a few more powerhouse performances at the Whittington Fall Auditorium in Brevard. The Brevard Concert Orchestra and Brevard Symphonic Winds will be performing Beethoven's iconic Symphony No. 5, as well as works by Benjamin Britten and others, on Friday, August 1st. The Brevard Sinfonia takes the stage for a riveting evening, including works by Henrik Wieniawski, Edward Elgar, and Aram Khachaturian on Saturday, August 2nd. And the season finale will feature the Brevard Music Center Orchestra and Chorus with pianist Richard Good in a program of Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 25 in C major and Ralph Vaughan Williams's A C Symphony. Cabarrus Arts Council is presenting Black Charlotte at the Davis Theater in Concord on Friday, August 1st from 7:30 to 9 p.m. Through verse and music, 15 poets will reflect on the black history, neighborhoods, voices, and future of the Queen City during this evening of celebration and storytelling. Contemporary jazz pianist David Benoit will be at Middle Sea Jazz in Uptown Charlotte on Saturday, August 2nd. Rooted in the tradition of Dave Brubeck and Bill Evans, Benoit will be doing two performances at 6:15 p.m. and 8:45 p.m. Craft cocktails and small plates are served up to an hour before each show. It's History in a Cup with Liberty Steeped at the Charlotte Museum of History on Saturday, August 2nd from 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. The event will explore the vital role of women in the American Revolution. The conversation will be accompanied by a tea service and light fare. What happens when you take present-day pop hits and perform them in the style of ragtime, swing, or doo-wop? You get the retro musical collective known as Postmodern Jukebox. The YouTube sensations are bringing their Magic and Moonlight tour to Blumenthal Arts Night Theater in Uptown Charlotte on Thursday, August 7th. You're even encouraged to come dressed in your favorite vintage style. Be sure to check back for even more fun stuff to see and do next week. And don't forget, you can also stay up to date with the WDAV events calendar at WDAV.org. Thanks so much for listening. You can also hear past episodes at WDAV.org/podcasts and on Apple Podcasts. For Piedmont Arts, I'm Phil Vavra.